So yesterday, the streets of Washington, D.C. were flooded with hundreds and thousands of people who came from across the country to join in the March for Our Lives. Some of you may have even gone and demonstrated with them. It was organized primarily with leadership from the students of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida. And they began planning the march shortly after the tragic shooting that happened in their school. It's incredible as I watched see a march organized basically from students who did this out of their parents' living room. Hard to watch, especially for us in this area after yet another shooting on Tuesday in Southern Maryland. I hate the very fact that our preschool we're training our teachers in a couple weeks to do active shooter drills, right? Many of you who work in schools, maybe your parents, these things are on your mind. And so these students have taken action really in incredible ways. They've gone down to the state capitol in Florida. They met with lawmakers. They held a nationally broadcast town hall meeting. And even before yesterday's march, they had actually begun to see some results. Florida passed new laws for gun control, banning bump stocks, raising the age to purchase a firearm from 18 to 21, instituting a three-day waiting period, all kinds of things. The U.S. House of Representatives also passed the Stop School Violence Act recently, and while it doesn't address gun control directly, it certainly appropriates more money for school safety, for training, and tip lines. Now, many of us may think this may be too little, too late, and so these marches become more and more important. As the students contend, school safety shouldn't be a partisan political issue. All of us, regardless of political party, should be able to unite around the common mission to protect the lives of our children and secure their future. As the mission statement of the March for Our Lives declares, it doesn't have to be this way. Change is coming. And it starts now, inspired and led by the kids who are our hope for the future. Their young voices will be heard. Now, whether you participated in the march yesterday, or whether you have differing opinions on the appropriate policy changes that should be made, I want you to feel in your gut that reaction you're having to the March for Our Lives. Right? Positive, negative, it doesn't matter what it is. And I want you to keep that feeling with you as we begin to look at our reading for today. Because what you may or may not realize is that Jesus is engaging in just as politically charged of a protest when he walks into Jerusalem. We have a tendency to over-spiritualize some of the activities of Holy Week and miss out on the very real-world drama that's happening, the ways in which Jesus is interacting in society in much the ways that you and I engage with it. There's both deep theological meaning here, but also very real political implications. See, Jesus joins with hundreds of thousands of Jews that had come to Jerusalem to celebrate the festival of Passover. Now, Passover commemorates God's mighty acts of liberation, of freeing the Jewish people from slavery in the land of Egypt. During this festival, people told the story of how God was a freedom fighter. God helped the poor and the lowly, the oppressed. They sang the song of Miriam. Maybe they were also celebrating Women's History Month as well. They sang Miriam's song, "Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. Horse and rider he has thrown into the sea." Now, as they sang these songs, it didn't take a wild imagination to draw a parallel between the oppression the Jewish people experienced under Egypt and the oppression that they were feeling under Rome. A century before Jesus was born, the songs of Passover, the hope for Jewish freedom, it sparked the Maccabean Rebellion. Lasted for 7 years, and even though Rome had decisively squashed the rebels and did everything they could to discourage any kinds of future revolution, they were never able to fully extinguish the dream of a free and independent Jewish people. So many first century Jews living in the time of Jesus, they believed that God's chosen one, the Messiah, was going to come and liberate the Jewish people from the tyranny of Rome. And what better time for God's Messiah to do this than at the festival of Passover? May you add to these hopes and expectations the very fact that since that grand Maccabean revolution, palm branches symbolized victory. And whenever you wave them, this was how you did a ticker tape parade in the first century, right? This is how you celebrated the NCAA champions. This is how you celebrated returning veterans from war. This is what this meant. And if you begin to carry all these pieces together, a new way of looking at this reading comes into view. John is telling us that the crowd is waving palm branches. They're singing songs, celebrating Jesus as if he is a national hero and rebel leader that is marching into the city. So much so that they break out into song. They start singing Psalm 118, that reading that we heard earlier. This psalm, you may not know, it's considered one of the royal hymns. It was a hymn of national victory. When Israel sang this song, they had always sung it when a triumphant king returned from the battlefield, entered the capital city, and made his way to the holy temple to worship God and give thanksgiving for victory. And so when they sing, "Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel," this is a dangerous political statement. The people might as well have been singing a song with lines of the hymn that said, "Down to Caesar, Jesus is our only true king, long live the revolution." This is what they are saying. These are treasonous words for an occupied people to sing. They might as well have gone through the streets blasting the soundtrack to the revolution throughout Jerusalem. And I bring this up today because as we meditate on the meaning of Holy Week and what happens and our remembrances, it's important for us to keep in mind that Jesus was not crucified because he was a really nice guy. The religious establishment didn't want Jesus gone because he was more popular than they were. If Jesus had only talked about, if he only acted on issues of personal piety and private spirituality, he would have lived to a very long age. Jesus was unconcerned with the arrangements of power in our world. If he didn't care about issues of corruption and injustice, no one would have thought twice about him. But for Jesus, that inward journey of spiritual growth, that connection with God and what God is up to in the world, it was intimately connected with an outward journey of mission and social justice. To engage deeper with God meant to engage deeper with the world of God. It is true that you find throughout the Gospels Jesus teaching and modeling for his disciples the importance of prayer and developing a connection with God. Jesus wants everyone to experience God's love and forgiveness. And at the same time, Jesus is unwavering in his teachings to people of faith that we must fight injustice. I mean, we must work to end hunger and poverty, that we must build a better world. See, it's not just enough to agree with Jesus that the world should be rooted in God's justice, love, and mercy. You actually have to do something about it. You have to put your faith into action. You have to be committed to make the world as it is better resemble the world as it should be. This is why our church is so committed to our local community, right? This is our firm belief. We want to take seriously Jesus' call to feed the hungry, and so in May, we'll partner with sister churches to package 10,000 meals, right? We believe that when Jesus calls us to clothe the naked, he actually means it, and so we work with Bright Paths and the Lamb Center to provide for people who can't even afford new clothes. Our summer camp and our volunteer work with CityGate, our projects with Voice, our furniture collection with Cho, our support of Baptist World Aid, all of these are concrete examples of the ways we work to act on the values of Jesus, to make real, intangible, in concrete ways the love of God to our world. Because the Christian faith is rooted in experiencing God's transformation in your life and then joining in the work of transforming the world and what God is doing. And our work to change the world, our work of mission, it's different from other organizations in the world around us, right? We're not a political party trying to achieve our ends in the world. We're not trying to get our deacons all elected to town hall council or something like that. At least I'm not aware that we are. Our goal is not to rule the world. We operate on a different kind of values than we see around us. And it's in the same way that while Jesus is leading a protest, it looks very different than the other kinds of marches and demonstrations that were happening in Jerusalem. John tells us the disciples didn't realize it in that moment. They only understood it looking backwards. But on that Palm Sunday, something in their gut said, something doesn't look right. If Jesus is this great rebel leader that we're celebrating, something is off here. That crowd waved palm branches. They sung royal hymns. They were celebrating a warrior king entering the city ready for battle. And if that was true, where is Jesus' army? I mean, the disciples looked around. Jesus is supposed to be this great general. He's going to lead this revolution. He's going to fight off Rome, the most powerful army on the face of the planet at that time. And they look behind Jesus, and there are no soldiers. There are no chariots. There are no archers. There's no generals. There's not even any weapons. Jesus is being followed by this ragtag group of misfits and outcasts and poor people and homeless folks and malcontents. This is not the army you're raising if you are going to defeat Caesar. Jesus doesn't even ride in on a white stallion. You know, some powerful horse that you would expect a great general to ride in on, right? How many times have you seen a painting of George Washington and he is on a donkey? Never, right? The prophet Zechariah says that a donkey is the animal of peaceful farmers, not military leaders. Everything about this scene is almost as if Jesus is telling an inside joke. Right? We know, and we've sung today, that Jesus is a king, but a different kind of king than people are expecting. He will save his people, but not in the ways that they expect. He's not come armed with the weapons of war and violence. If Rome made its power known through domination and oppression, Jesus will not try and outdo them by being more violent, more aggressive in response. He's come to sacrifice himself for the good of others. He knows all too well that soon enough, this crowd celebrating him as a great leader, waving palm branches, singing songs, soon they're going to turn on him. Soon these chants of Hosanna, save us, great King of Israel, will turn to crucify him. But Jesus also knows that darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Salvation will not come into the world through the edge of a sword. By taking on death into himself, not forcing it upon others, Jesus transforms it into something else entirely. He takes a symbol of defeat, of punishment, of hatred, and he changes it into a symbol that next Sunday we'll celebrate as a symbol of life and love. Is that not the great miracle about to take place? It is as though through his humiliation, all humiliation is transformed. He will reveal to people that at last all the powers of violence and hate are overcome by the power of God's love and peace. That no matter how sharp the knife, how strong the bullet, how big the tank, love always wins. Ultimately, life cannot be defeated. So we see Jesus this Palm Sunday on a march through the streets of Jerusalem as a peaceful protester, mocking warmongering politicians and greedy religious leaders, leading a parade of misfits who dare to sing of the power of love and peace and generosity and forgiveness in the world. Jesus leads a motley crew of the poor and the lowly in a carnival that reveals a new kingdom is breaking into this old world. And today, we cannot be content to be members of a crowd waving our palm branches in the good times, singing of how great this world is that Jesus dreams of, but being unwilling to step in and actually help build it. To follow Jesus in this march of palm branches is to look foolish in the eyes of those of this world who only understand domination and oppression. It's foolish for those who worship the ways of the world to pray for peace in a world of violence. It's foolish to give your money away to help others than to just spend it on yourself. It's foolish to love, foolish to dream, foolish to be something more, foolish to believe that ordinary people can change the world. Maybe following Jesus means being just a bit foolish. To believe that through the power of God, we can make a difference. That we're not victims of impersonal forces, that poverty and hunger and violence, they're just business as usual. They're just normal facts of life that we always have to accept. As a matter of fact, as followers of Jesus, we refuse to believe that's the way the world has to be. Today we celebrate a God who makes all things new, who believes in us so much he's willing to endure the cross to make new life possible. We celebrate a God who awakens in us a desire to discover the love of God and to share that love with others. We believe we are called to be a transformed community, working for the transformation of the world. And so we sing, we celebrate the risen King who overcomes evil with good, hate with love, death with new life. So today, may you receive God's love and grace for you. May you join our motley crew marching in this palm branch waving group. May we dream boldly of a better world. And may we act with even greater boldness to make that world a reality. Amen.